The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
It settles in your soul. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa, Jefferson State of Mind. I'm here with Liam, our producer. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Just hanging out.
You just hanging out? What? So you just, like, go to bed early Saturday night anticipating the show, and the show's all Sunday, or?
Most nights. I'm actually out by, like, 10:30. 10:30, 10.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, when I was your age, I don't think I ever slept.
Well, I don't know. I get so much done during the day, I don't need to stay up late.
Well, that's good, buddy.
No.
It's refreshing to hear.
Well, yeah.
We'll need to work on that.
That's for sure. Anyway, I'm here with Patrick Jones and his beautiful wife, Lori, and he is the supervisor in Shasta County for District 4. We are broadcasting live from downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better, and 1460 AM. We are your talk radio. Streaming worldwide at KCNR1460.com, and we are archived forever and ever. My partner, Wynn Carpenter, is on assignment. He's actually doing some fun things with aircraft. We hope that Wynn gets his pilot license pretty soon. That way I don't have to drive anymore. But we're here with Patrick and Lori. And Patrick, there's a few things I'd like to go over, you know, as far as the county goes and kind of bring people up to speed on it. The first thing is the budget. And we can start with that, but the part I want to get to is Health and Human Services has a large portion of that budget in Shasta County. Now, is that relative to maybe a lot of the counties in California, or are we unique to that?
Well, yeah, Terry, and I'll get to those. But first I wanted to just say thanks for having me on today. Today's a special day, 9/11. Obviously,
yes,
we all remember that 21 years ago, and so we want to thank you know, and remember all the people that had lost their lives for that. And I still remember Pearl Harbor, a similar situation before my time, but, you know, a very impactful event as 9/11 was too. So, important day today. And so, it's a little humbling to be here on this day. You know, this is kind of a special day to remember. But I am happy to be here and talk about a lot of the different issues. Health and Human Services, for Shasta County is roughly around a $300 million budget, and many different departments, and it's often referred to as, at the county, the monster, because there's so many different parts to it. A lot of grant money coming in, lots of different programs that are out there, and the thing that's frustrating for me, being only on the board for almost 2 years now, is that when we accept this money for the variety of different programs, you know, how effective is it? Are we spending that money wisely? Are we really having the effect? Or are we just going through the motions, you know, qualifying the terms and the agreements that are within the grants, spending the money, creating some positions, some employment for some county workers, you know, and spending a lot of money without really getting results? And I think sometimes what ends up happening, because it's so easy to accept money from the state in this regard for this type of grant money, that a lot of these things end up becoming enabling devices for
yes.
the people that you actually are trying to, you know, fix or solve. And, you know, and so, hopefully, as we move forward, which right now we have our acting Health and Human Services director, Ms. Laura Birch, and she's kind of doing a review right now, and we're already uncovering some things, and I think we're just going to need to continue to do that on such a big department, and, you know, and then really question. I remember not that long ago when Leonard Modi was on the board, and someone made the comment that, you know, you might want to turn that grant down, and he just thought that was just a crazy idea to turn down grant money. But the reality is, if it's not going to be an effective use of public funds, then maybe you should. And I realize some other county will take advantage of that, but if we can't spend it correctly, then we shouldn't receive it. And that's what I hope to get to is are we spending these funds in a way? Now, take a look at our county over the last 20 years. Look at how much money has been spent. In fact, the budget has literally doubled in the last 20 years.
So $300 million that Health and Human Services get, isn't that half of our entire budget?
Correct.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I think it might even be slightly more than half.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, go ahead.
So take a look at the total budget from 20 years ago to today. It's doubled, practically doubled, and our population has only grown by 10,000. Mm. And you have to ask ourselves today, are we better? Is the community better? Is Redding better? Is Shasta County better today than it was 20 years ago? And I think most of us that have been here a long time would say no. And so the reality is you're throwing money at things, but it's not helping. And, you know, some new ideas. In fact, I'm starting to refer it as, I think I want to go back to the future. Going back to some of these ways that, have been said to be not so good. But the reality is they're better than what you're doing today. And, you know, and so, you know, these are some tough decisions that we have to make, and we'll be criticized for them. I'm hopeful as things go well in the election and we get new people. We will have two new supervisors, you know, coming in January. And I'm hoping that continues to be a conservative board that represents the people of Shasta County. And I hope our policies are reflecting of that, more conservative policies that are efficient and effective. And Health and Human Services is one of the big ones. It is the biggest nut to crack to try to get to the bottom of it. Now, I think there are some positive things that we can do. For example, when we have people incarcerated, I think we need to have Health and Human Services work more and spend more money on people that are incarcerated to prepare them as they come out to try to reduce whatever type of crime that they went in for. And I think we need to do a much better job there. And certainly we have the funds. And so I would like to pursue that more as we go forward and have Health and Human Services agencies take a more direct hands-on approach with incarcerated people and try to help them as they come out more than what we're doing. And I think we can do that all downtown in our, what I refer to as our Justice Center area, which is we have probation and we have our admin building and we have our jail all right in the same area.
A couple things about the jail. You know, when is all that really getting started? Where's the progress on a jail? I think that everybody in the county agrees that we need a jail. That's one. The other thing is, too, is that there's been a lot of controversy about the sheriff and shutting down a floor and letting out, was it 125 people, something like that? I mean, how does any of that make us safer? And we, again, like you said, we have 10,000 more people than 20 years ago, but we have $300 million more to work with. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, we'll take those in two separate. So first, let's talk about the jail and or the possibility of a new jail. So the board has approved us moving forward on a approximately 250-bed jail. I think it's 128 inmates per quad, if you will, or pod. And that's kind of the the current.
So you'd have perps in a pod?
I don't know what the terminology is. I've never been in jail, unlike our former CEO. The new jail.
I was drinking water. You had to do that to me, didn't you, partner? Go ahead.
The new jail will be state-of-the-art, and it'll be safer for inmates. It'll be safer for the correctional officers that run it, and they'll take fewer of them to run it. So that will help on the staffing problems as we move forward. And they are expensive, but the board has approved that. The design is being done as we speak, and it is most likely that we will go to construction as early as next year in 2023. Nice. We will, and that will be built right adjacent to the north of the current existing Shasta County Jail. There's a temporary state courtroom there right now that will be removed, and it'll go in that area. My vision moving forward thereafter is that is not an that particular project is not inexpensive. That's possibly a $120 million facility, but it does get 250-ish people off the streets in a modern system. And in the future, a future board could build yet another one alongside of it, and eventually in that same area, four that are connected up to each other. And I think that would handle the appropriate amount of incarceration for the next 50 years. And it's hard to think beyond 50 years because you just don't know the growth and the and you know what is happening. It's just like when the current jail was built in 1984. It was very hard to think 50 years in front of that. But we're using the best techniques, and I think that is a good idea. Now, the sheriff will take a look at the possibility of building a jail at a different location. So he is going, we have allocated him $25,000, and he will have some town hall meetings to see who wants a jail in their backyard. So I wish him good luck on that. Now the sheriff did, because of staffing, he could not staff the current jail. He has closed a few floors and has let inmates out. I read that in the paper. That was the first that I knew of it. That upset me without question, and I mentioned that to the sheriff in open session, that I don't like being informed on a major decision like that, you know, via the newspaper. But he is in charge of the jail. That is his responsibility. It is the law, and right now he is struggling to be able to staff that. He is apparently, as he has said, working on some recruitment ideas that he'll come back and present that to the board. And I'm working on that as well. I'm currently working with several other counties, not close to Shasta County, as to what their techniques are for recruiting so that we can make sure that we can properly recruit and staff the Shasta County Jail that we have. We can do that. We have the funds, we have the money, we have the resources, the energy, and the knowledge to do it. It simply just needs to get done.
You know, you had brought up a lot of good points there as far as the jail and the people on the streets, and talking about people on the streets. It was brought to my attention by a friend of mine who asked the police chief Shuler at the last city council meeting last Tuesday. The chief was asked, how many homeless camps are there in Reading? And he raised his eyebrows and said, 300. Now, we're talking about Reading. Now, I know there was some talk of on this show by Baron Browning about all the things they could do as far as county-wise, and as a supervisor, he could do about that issue. But wouldn't a lot of that fall, and I'm not saying that the Reading Police aren't doing you know, what they can, but wouldn't a lot of that jurisdiction fall to the city of Reading? And what responsibilities do the cities of Shasta, Reading, Anderson have as far as what they should be doing code enforcement wise or whatever as far as the homeless goes?
Well, and you know, and so it isn't an easy topic, and it is complicated, and it's not that I don't want to be sympathetic to those that are homeless. That isn't the case. But what we have been doing isn't working. I think more participation between the city of Reading and Shasta County working together will be helpful. I still want to take a more direct, tougher approach towards the homeless problem. And it's kind of like the old saying, if you feed the bears, you will have more bears. And you've got to use some tough love here. This is not an easy group of people to work with. There's mental problems with many of these people. There's drug addictions. There's criminal backgrounds. You have a whole variety of different issues here. And we're not saying that just being homeless that you're a criminal. That's not necessarily the case. But if you're littering, if you're trashing the place, if you are creating environmental damages, those are criminal acts. And we shouldn't have to bear-proof our town and our county, if you will, for bad behavior. And I want to hold people accountable for their behavior. And if you're illegal camping and making a mess, we should stop that. And, you know, right now there's some efforts right now recently around the Henderson open space. It's one area where they dislocated 200 people that were camped there. And without any other issues, they're just simply going to push them, you know, from that spot to another spot. That's not the answer. It's just pushing them around. You have to have a coordinated effort both with the city and the county to not tolerate the behavior, to have some services for the mentally impaired,
right.
And be very firm about it. This group of people, you can't be easy with. They've burned every bridge that they ever had. Addicts and such have had a long history of such, and so you have to deal with it firmly but fairly. And you know, they've had their way for the last, you know, 2-3 decades. So what I'm saying is, let us take a different approach, and then judge us afterwards, and hold us accountable. You know, let us have some changes, because clearly what we're doing isn't working, and our town isn't better for it. When I was a kid here in Reading growing up, we could walk across the entire town, entire county if you wanted.
Oh, yeah.
And Mom and Dad didn't have to really worry about it.
Yeah, our kids could go even trick-or-treat back in those days.
Right, you know, and now that's not the case. So we've allowed that behavior. We have let that happen,
yes,
to our county, to our city. And
well, a lot of that, I don't mean to interrupt, but a lot of that, you know, you start looking at the jurisdiction of the city of Reading, for example. We know, according to 2020 statistics, that 78%, and that was at that time, and this is what they could prove, 78% of the people that are homeless are on drugs.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, it goes back to that crime problem. Again, it goes back to a jail. Again, it goes back to getting these people off the street.
And there's many,
letting them out.
You know, there's many, as you say, there are many different issues. One issue, for example, they constantly talk about affordable housing. Well, when you have high impact fees and you have every regulation under the sun, yeah, no wonder people can't afford to build a home or rent an apartment when prices are so high, because you have not kept those costs down. And I really want to go over the resource management department. I've been unhappy with the department for quite some time. I do want to cut impact fees in half, and I want to cut every regulation that's unnecessary to allow growth to occur. And then you're going to start seeing more affordable housing for everyone. And that is a big component to this problem, is when it's unaffordable. And the whole state of California is practically unaffordable. And you know, while I don't care what Alameda County does and some of these other counties, I do care what happens here in Shasta County. And we should, with the median income being quite low, we should have affordable housing. And the way to do it is to cut your costs at the county and cut unnecessary regulations or unnecessary. You know, when you go to places like Wyoming, they don't have a resource management department. It doesn't exist. And yet those homes have stood for 100 years. So it's not about safety. It's not about protecting the public safety. They're extorting money out of you is what's happening, and regulating you. And they're pushing a lot of good people out of California, and the housing prices are at an all-time high. You know, even to build a house today, I mean, you're looking at least $300 a foot, and some of that is partially from what the county is doing in the regulation. If you take, in fact, I called Highline Homes not too long ago, and they have a variety of different homes that they've designed, and I saw the price for the one in Oregon and the same house for in California, and you add about $100,000.
Yeah, we were down visiting our oldest daughter. She lives in Redondo Beach. She's a coach and a teacher down there at El Camino College. Anyway, we were down there, and just beautiful down there. There was a home across the street that was 495 square feet.
A big one.
Yeah, 495, which is about the size of maybe where we're sitting. Anyway, it was going for just under $1 million. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, I mean, you guys have some property. If you had that much property down there, it would be worth gazillions. The challenge that we look at is that we talk about regulations and bringing them back, but there really hasn't been any core strong way or something to hold these people accountable or some way to do that. What's your plan? You've got about 5 minutes. What's your plan in making them accountable to the people as far as the resource department? What are your ideas?
So it always starts with the board and making the board on a majority vote. That's three out of five.
Right.
They move any kind of policies or procedures forward. And so, you know, the chair, you can mention it, an idea, an issue, an ordinance, a reduction of prices, this, that, to the chair, put it on the agenda, and then we take a vote. And we just simply need to be doing a lot more of that. We need to take a look at the Shasta County Unified Building Manual and overhaul it. You know, even on my years on city council, everybody talked about streamlining the permit process, streamlining, streamlining, streamlining. Everybody talks about it, but it never gets done. It continues because we allow the bureaucrats to continue to regulate and control us. We need a stronger board. To me, we need a more conservative board that starts diving into these problems and have department heads that understand our vision and carry those out, you know, to a T. And, you know, this was one of the things I saw as a serious problem when I was on council, is that when a staff item wanted, you know, was approved, it moved forward very quickly. When council had something that was not staff-driven, it moved forward and it was approved, was moving very slow. And this upset me because it should have moved at the same speed. And clearly, that means your staff is biased, and they were moving very slow. And then sometimes they move so slow that the project ended up dying. And hopefully a strong board at Shasta County will not allow those types of things to happen. We want good people within Shasta County and Shasta County government. In fact, all cities and counties want good people, and we have some good people. But we need to start really thinking about moving the county forward. For me, it's reducing fees, reducing regulations, and having some growth occur. It will reduce the housing crunch that we have. There is a shortage of housings right now. And the market is kind of slowing down a little bit. We're seeing that. It's been said that there could be a recession coming.
I think it's here, brother.
and so I would say that, it's going to be difficult in the next few years, you know, for developers to move forward when, major changes occur in the market, and we're starting to see some instability now. And so, but we have seen these things. It's a cycle, and we see them about every, you know, 10 to 15 years. We see ups and we see downs. But I think if we have our policies improved and in position, that as the rebound starts to occur, that we could quickly move and start building housing rapidly at a reduced cost.
I think that a lot of it is that the government and even the local officials, and we'll get into some of this after the break. We're going to have to take that in about a minute. There is that position of they don't care what we want. They don't care what the people want. They're going to do what they want to do, and what the people who sort of grease their pan wants them to do. And I think that the ignoring of everything that's happened from, and of course, present company, not at all. And some of the candidates look pretty good. And I just will say this before we go off to the break. Chris Kellstrom, I know when he did 30-second commercials, and I've heard a lot of them, we've all heard a lot of them, I never, ever heard any candidate come on and do an ad talking about a problem and giving a solution in 30 seconds. Yet all we have from a lot of other candidates is platitudes. Hey, I'm really a good guy. I like my family. I like my kids. I like my community. You know, I like my dog. I like my parakeet. But the point is that we need to have real solutions. And what we'll do is go off to the first break. We're going to talk about that. on the other side. And I also want to talk about Tuesday's meeting a little bit on the other side. So with that, my friends, time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
When the world stopped turning on that September day, teaching a class full of innocent children, or driving down some cold interstate. Did you feel guilty 'cause you're a survivor? In a crowded room, did you feel alone? Did you call up your mother and tell her you loved her? Did you dust off that Bible?
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
The elders of our community, men and women who've led commendable lives. After working hard, raising families, serving their communities, and some serving our country, many find their safety and well-being is at risk. They risk losing their health, independence, and becoming vulnerable to many forms of abuse. The good news is we can all make a difference. Shining Care invites you to the Healthy Aging Fair. Make plans to attend September 15th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Orchard Nutrition Center, 221 Locust Street in Reading. Drive through and grab your free goodie bag filled with resourceful information, or park and visit all of the resource booths. Age well by visiting the Healthy Aging Fair September 15th, 10 to 1. For more info, go to shiningcare.org, and we'll see you at Orchard Nutrition Center for the Healthy Aging Fair September 15th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Special thanks to our community partners, PSA2 Area Agency on Aging, Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, and Orchard Nutrition Center.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew. This month's cigar of the humidor is La Unica Dominican Primeros. Premium shade-grown Connecticut wrappers, combined with a long filler blend of aged Cuban seed Dominican tobaccos, providing a smooth, mellow to medium-bodied experience. It's a rich and balanced selection with subtle hints of nuts, cream, and fruit. La Unica Dominican Primeros. Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
That song is brought to you by the courtesy of Rally Sally. Thank you, baby. Good job on that music. We're here with Patrick Jones, Supervisor Shasta County, District 4, and his wife, Lori. And if you have a question or a comment, we'll open up the lines, 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. Now, Tuesday's meeting... from what I understand, I heard this on the show previously, on Matt's show, that Kathy Darling Allen is going to be asked to about some election records, but apparently they legally, in the communist state of California, can be destroyed by September 3rd. First of all, what are those things that could be destroyed? Second of all, what's that agenda item all about?
So we do have a variety of different... topics, and I pulled a few consent items off, a couple for the sheriff and one for the health department. So we'll have a variety of different topics to talk about. One of the issues that the board brought up last meeting before the September 3rd deadline was to not destroy any 2020 election records, which she has to hold them, I think, for a certain period, and then after September 3rd, she could destroy them if she wanted. So we asked, we sent a text and a letter before the 3rd.
This was the Board of Supervisors.
Board of Supervisors, okay. To not destroy any of those records. Now it's formally being asked, and we'll take the actual vote here on the 13th. Now, the question is, did she destroy those? Legally, she can. We have not taken affirmative action, and so she has the ability to do that. The situation here, though, is that we asked her not to, and there's no monetary reason why you would need to destroy them. If the board asked to preserve those records, and in fact, if after September 3rd she did destroy them, why? And I think that would be a very good question. Why did you destroy them after we asked you not to? Because we may want to look into those. So to my knowledge, I don't know whether she has destroyed any information regarding the 2022 election or not. We will know most likely what's occurred on the 13th at Tuesday's meeting. Of course, that's at 1450 Court Street, 9 o'clock.
Was that a unanimous vote? All five supervisors requested that, or was that just... Is that what happened? Was it all five that requested that?
You know, to be honest, I can't remember. I know there was at least a majority, but I don't know if it was 5-0.
So there wasn't a majority.
It's certainly a majority. I don't remember if it was a 5-0 or not.
Okay.
And so we did, that is, so when that came up, it wasn't agendized, so we have to put it on a future meeting to vote on, which is the 13th. That's next Tuesday. The problem is that she has the legal ability to destroy the information on the 3rd, which is come and gone. So the question is, legally, could she do it? Yes. But why would you, if we asked you before the 3rd not to, why would you if you did? Now, she may not have. I don't know. We will know on the 13th and then go forward from there.
Now, that'll be at 9 a.m.
Yes.
At the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Yes. And if you've never been there, we encourage you to come out. And we put on a pretty good show. And no charge for entering. And it's your building. Taxpayers paid for it. So it's at 1450 Court Street, so the admin building. It's right next to the current courthouse, and it's across the street from the new courthouse. So we're surrounded by courthouses. Nobody's in them, but we're surrounded by them.
That's true. We do have a caller on the line. Dick, how are you, sir? What say you?
I got to talk to Patrick here. Anyway, you know, before the virus hit us, we used to have a meeting at the church of the Patriots. It used to be the Tea Party. Anyway, we had Melissa Hunt on there once, and she was telling us, I think she's city council in Anderson, and she was telling us what a great job they did. It got rid of all the homeless out of Anderson. And I said to her, you know, they got to go someplace. As a citizen of Reading, I want to say thanks a lot for doing that.
Yeah, 300 camps.
But anyway, I heard you guys talking about, I see on TV, they have these cleanups. They wipe out a whole camp and all tons of stuff. You know, these people have to go someplace, or they have to live someplace. They're homeless, so they're just going to move someplace else, and they just keep tearing up their camps and moving them, and I don't see much sense in it. I say just leave them alone. They're breaking the law, yeah, but they have to live someplace. So where are they going to go? They're going to go to a new place. They set up a new community and do their drugs and all. But what are you going to do? They have to be someplace. And you guys tear up their living quarters and they move.
Well, that's a good question, Dick. And I'm going to propose that we put them in a big red barn somewhere located in the city of Reading.
That's a good idea.
I'm just looking for somebody that might have a big red barn. That's all.
If I come across one, I'll drop you a line and let you know.
All right. Thank you, Dick. It's a great question. But the reality here is that California has roughly half the homeless population for the entire country. Now, that is not by chance. That's because you have given out more money for a variety of different programs, some of which are failed programs, and you're enabling the bad behavior. And I've seen people locally here in our community that are not from around here. They have come here because of a lax attitude towards that behavior. First, you don't tolerate the bad behavior. We shouldn't do that. And I'll tell you a little story. It's probably illegal, but I did it anyways. But when I was a kid, me and my buddies, we'd ride down at night, and we would shoot pigeons. This was in the 70s, under the Cypress Bridge. That was our favorite bridge. And there was a few other bridges. We shot a lot of pigeons and helped save the city a lot of money from pigeon problems. And We would shine a light, and Joe would shine the light, and Dave held the bag, and I shot him with my pellet gun. And we, you know, on Cypress Bridge, we'd start on the east side, and we'd work our way towards the west side, and usually just before sunup, we'd start heading home. And we did this all the time.
Was that for a reduction of pigeon poop?
And,
new ordinance.
Believe it or not, we ate the birds, and my best night, I shot 123. That was my record. I never did better than that, but that was a good night. But anyways, let's get back to the story. So we start on the east side of the Cypress Bridge. We work our way down, and as it just starts getting light, we're on the west side. We're about ready to head back, and Joe says, "Hey, there's something moving down there, and there's some rustling in the bushes." And he yells out, and he goes, "Hey, it's a bum." And we all look down there, and sure enough, there's a bum down there. That's what we call them, bums. And that was a big news. So we come home, we told our parents, "Hey, there's a bum on the west side of Cypress Bridge. You know, we saw a bum today." And we'd never seen one before. Yeah. And we're under that bridge all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And
yes.
So the behavior wasn't tolerated before. Now if you go under the Cypress Street Bridge, it's a small town under there, and all types of illegal activities and drugs and various other things. And it's just simply we've tolerated this bad behavior, and it's not that we're not compassionate about helping people.
Sure.
But you can't let it at the same time destroy your county, which we're close to doing. They've started fires. There's a lot of environmental health problems and issues that occur from it. And so I say we got to go back to the future and be a little tougher on this group. And ultimately, by being tougher, you will help them. Being out on the streets, it's just a death sentence. You're not going to live out there with the hot and cold temperatures year after year. You're only going to be surviving for a short time period. Help those ones that want the help, that will take the help, incarcerate those that need to be incarcerated, and move the others along if they do not want to abide by rules. And it's just a tougher approach. I'm ready to do it.
Yeah, I want to bring Lori in here because, and Lori, tell people about your background. It's pretty interesting, your family and your background, what you've done, the different businesses you've ran, all that good stuff. But I want you to go into these programs, and I'd like to get your view and what you think we can do and what you see.
Okay, well, my background, let's see. I have 2 degrees, one in law enforcement and a second one in wildlife law enforcement. So I did intern for several years with the Fish and Game in one of the largest regions, Region 3. I worked right with the regional director as well as the top captain, and then would go out on patrol regularly in different areas and, you know, fish planting as well as on the boats, as well as walking and catching people with too many pheasants or that kind of thing.
How about pigeon shooters?
Yeah, no, we didn't. I think that's okay.
They were domesticated, so that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's legal. But I branched out from there and did not continue in that career and went, ran several businesses simultaneously. I went into something completely opposite. I went into legal, I'll repeat the word, legal gambling, and did that for many, many years, had quite a few employees. And so you have to look at a business as a business.
Sure.
And that's what I always respected about Patrick, because he didn't just, woo me or any. I didn't even know who he was. You know, people are like, "Oh, you know Patrick Jones." And I'm like, "No, I'm sorry. I don't know who he is." But I quickly learned and was willing to go out and walk door to door because of what he stood for. I liked that he saw as a councilman is when I first knew him. And I saw that he really was there for the right purpose.
Sure.
Let's make it work. Because I see the county and the city as of one very large business, right? And so you need several people at the helm with the right common sense that look at things practically. And I remember talking with him. He got kind of a bad rap originally with police and fire, thinking he didn't support them and veterans. And it's like, oh, my God, it's so opposite of what he does and what he stands for, that the rumors and the stories that got out there, it's like when I have an opportunity, I talk directly to somebody, and I said, and don't take my word, I said, go talk to Patrick himself. He makes himself very, very available, especially as a supervisor, and it's good. He's at Jones Fort you know, 6 days a week, many, many hours, and I love that he's able to help in that way. And so he's very accessible. I send people there. I said, go talk to him. I said, you've heard something, and I said, come on, it's okay. I sit often in the boardroom because it does fascinate me. I spent many years in around the judicial system. My father was the very first California Circuit Court judge.
Wow.
And I've met many chief justices, different occasions. I've gone to judges' convention, San Diego, La Jolla. So I enjoyed my time around that. That's why I liked the law enforcement aspect or the justice part of things. I saw things that way. So being around the courts, thinking, knowing things fair or that, and then my dad became, of course, the Superior Court judge, and it now has passed, and my brother is currently Superior Court judge. So I like the law. I like fair and reasonable things. So I look at everything from a broad spectrum. I analyze them, and when I go into the Board of Supervisor meeting, I do listen. I watch. I watch the way, you know, the board conducts what's going on. They have been doing better, in my opinion, and they're working hard to try to have a little more consensus on things, but they're not as logical sometimes as I would like to see the whole board perform.
Well, we do have a caller on the line. Lori, what say you?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Really good topic about the whole, what do we do about... I'm going to say the homeless, but you know what? The middle class is already being wiped out as we speak. Ron Paul sent something out yesterday, a 13-minute video. I sent it out to several people. This labor wage issue, we're not keeping up. The middle class is about going to be extinguished. So when we can, I don't know, can we keep talking about, oh, those poor people? The poor people have been on the street for a long time. Now it's the middle class finding themselves struggling, wanting their third job. If the dollar's worth 10 cents, we're not going to make it at the gas station and the grocery store, folks. So what was that survey they did? 40% of Americans don't have an extra $400 for an emergency, and we send $3 billion to Ukraine for what? Weapons and aid?
It's more than that.
Well, and we know they're not telling us the truth. But
right.
That's my point is regarding you know, Patrick and Lori and everybody else that goes to the board meetings very regularly. If this collapse is going to be very swift, and we're going to liquidate. Look what they did with the school loans. They're kind of dangling that thing like they did with the stimulus money for COVID. Here, we'll give you a little bit of thing so you can calm down and don't flip out. But meanwhile, everything jacked up, prices. We can't afford anything.
Well, there's two things there. One is that Patrick made a good point about tough love. Anytime you have an issue, it, you know, and that's, and if you're, you know, and I'm talking to the moral majority right now, you know, that it, when you're, when there's a rehab program or there is something to where you're dealing with a church, they always talk about tough love. It's always about responsibility and accountability, and you help them. In other words, you don't you help them feed themselves, and that's biblical, and you have all that stuff going on, and you still have this bleeding heart program. The other part of that, too, is that locally, the idea of having a board of supervisors, we can take back some of this, but we have to have a board that's not going to be the status quo. And I think that two of the candidates that are running are looking to not go with the status quo, but what's going to help the people, and I think two of them are just the status quo.
Okay, well, my point is, and I'm going to rephrase it so I'm extra clear. If the entire middle class is about to be shoved off the boat, the train, the bus, whatever, because we're not going to be able to buy anything because of the inflation issue and the Federal Reserve, and why are these people meeting in secret figuring out the interest rate all these years? This is why it's crashing. And it's
yeah, but what can we do about that? See, the thing is, we have to have
awareness.
Well, I know, I understand, and I agree with you. But
tough love's not going to help when we're all going to get smacked upside the head, all of us.
Well, tough love meaning a jail is what I meant.
Okay, well, I'm a step ahead because we're all going to go off the trolley cart real quick when they keep raising the prices
of everything.
And they can
do
what they want.
True.
I can't work more than three jobs. Sorry, I can't.
Yep.
Well, and if the dollar's going to be 10 cents, that's your sign, folks. The collapse has been planned, and the Marxists, the New World Order, the control, they're going to want us wimping, crying, and sobbing because we won't be able to afford, you know, a breadcrumb. So I'm not trying to panic people, but I'm just saying if there's some events about to happen and they don't want this election bickering or that we're upset because we think there's, you know, issues.
Yeah, so, she would have dumped it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just saying, could we be a little kinder to the people that are already struggling and surviving?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Well, I don't think it was in that tone that those
comments. No. I guess I'm trying to say is, folks, if you do not see the writing on the wall,
okay,
that's my point.
And I'm with you, but we do have another caller.
Okay, real good. Thank
okay,
you
thanks a lot.
Well, but to Lori's question, you know, what a difference 2 years makes, huh? Under the Trump administration, we didn't see any of these things. Gas prices were cheap, and that has a trickle effect on all the products. And, you know, if we can hang on for 2 years, and I firmly believe that our current and our true president will come back in 2 years, and I'm hoping that we see some big improvements in the midterm. So I think we can skip along for the next 2 years. But, yeah, this administration has been devastating and has brought us to the brink.
Absolutely.
And, you know, no question.
We have a caller on the line. Brenda, what say you?
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
So, you know, I come to the boards all the time, and I have talked about my daughter in the past being homeless. And it just kind of breaks my heart that I don't think you understand how many grandmothers and people are sitting here listening to you guys laugh about this subject. Parents like myself, I'm waiting for that phone call that my daughter's dead. Literally waiting for that phone call.
Did you say we were laughing about the subject?
It just kind of appears like...
No, we were laughing about the pigeons.
But you guys kind of laugh about the homeless, like, nonchalantly, like they just...
I don't think so. You know, and I really...
There is a portion of people that want to be out there.
Well, okay, and I agree with you. It's fine if you want to speak. I'm with you. We can have a conversation. I'm just saying...
I'm not yelling at you. I'm just telling you how I'm
just... I understand. But I don't think people take it that way because we weren't laughing about the homeless. We never do that. I mean, I had a son that was homeless for a while. I went out and helped the homeless. I helped a lady the other day who's been on the streets for 40 years, laying in the sun. So I got her some water, gave her some money. I don't think that that's the case at all. You know, I've gone out to give them anything I can, food, whatever. I don't think that's the case. And I don't think it's the case that people want to go after the homeless, the people that really are. We were talking about the drug situation, the 78%, and stopping the drug problem and crime. So really and truly, even though I respect your opinion, please don't put words in our mouth. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, the comments that I read and stuff and the things that I've
that
had
you
to
read. Well, that has nothing to do with this program or what we said.
Have really been, not really been very nice. So the thing is, the housing is almost unattainable here for people. The programs are nearly unattainable here because I've been doing this for six years. And it's not that some of them don't want off the street or want to get that help.
Sure.
Most programs here are outpatient programs. We don't have enough regular, up-to-date facilities to treat these people, whether they're addicted to drugs or addicted to alcohol. And we definitely don't have mental health here. I don't know how many times that I've been down to the parks and I've seen nice trucks sitting there and they don't get popped. And I know that those are drug dealers. And they're just still sitting there doing the same
thing. That's a law enforcement issue because they can't get popped. See, that's a law enforcement issue. That was the point. So I'm going to put this in a nutshell because we only have a few more minutes.
Well, Terry, I'm going to agree to a certain degree with Brenda.
Well, I agree with that,
you know,
too.
And she does come to the boardroom, and a lot of the things she says is enlightening, but she has seen it firsthand. And what we are doing, Brenda, you're right. You've said it before. What we're doing right now is not working. We certainly have enough money, but the programs are not getting on the ground helping the people in the way they need to.
Right.
The bureaucracy is eating up a lion's share of the money, and it's not getting to where it needs to go.
And I'm not trying to attack anybody. I didn't mean to come off like that. And, you know, it's just, this is hard for me every day. I'm adopting three children. It's costing me money that I don't have. I don't get help with any of that. None. Zero. And, yeah, it is frustrating to see all these people get all this. Even my daughter gets this $1,300 check a month. And it's gone in 2 days, not because she spends it, because everybody else does. And there's nothing I can do about it. So, yeah, there is all these handouts. So I do agree with all this stuff. But, yeah, it's frustrating when I can't help my own kid, and it's not about that I haven't tried.
Yeah,
or many
yeah.
of us haven't tried, right. And then I can't even get the help that I need. I have to adopt a third child. That's going to cost me another $15,000
sure,
that I don't have.
You know, Sal and I know that. I mean, Sal and I know that. And I agree with you, Brenda. And, I hear everything you're saying, and I agree with that. I just want to make sure that that you understand that we're on the same team here, number one. Number two, if we get the 250 drug dealers – and the 250 criminals that keep getting arrested and turning back out on the streets in a jail, that's part of, and the programs, that's part of helping the homeless. You know, yeah. At this point, it's up to the citizens. It's, you know, it's up to you. But, you know, you can tell the ones that are just out there peddling the drugs and the ones that are really in need. And I hear you. And I think that's the differentiation that we've been trying to make with the jail being a priority.
Right. And I do agree with Chief Johnson's plan. I do like what he wants to do. You know, you have to get these people in a place where you can sort them out. If you keep sweeping them from one side of the sidewalk to the other, which that's exactly what's happening, you push them down and back across the street and then back again. If you don't get these people in one place and start sorting through them, you're not going to get to the ones that really can take the help.
And if we can get, again, it's probably closer to 90% of them being on drugs. If we can get some of these drugs off the streets, we have a situation where we get them off the street, incarcerated, then we can help those people. Not to say we don't do it all at the same time. I'm not saying that. But the real deal is that it's the drugs and all that stuff that is really an issue, and we have to have a situation where we can help law enforcement
absolutely
to incarcerate the people who are the bad guys.
I absolutely agree with that. Yes, I do.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Brenda. Okay.
All right.
See you Tuesday.
Well, it's, you know, this is not an easy topic, and you know, I'm sorry if she felt that we made light of it, but, it is a serious issue. It affects a lot of people here in Shasta County, not only, of course, for the homeless, but, you know, for a lot of business owners and housing values and business opportunities and all those things, are affected by this problem. And so it is a complex problem. What I'm saying is what we've done, isn't working. Changes need to occur. We have the money, but it's how we're spending it. I'd like to see the money be spent here in Shasta County, less subbing stuff out to, you know, to other counties somewhere else. Let's do it in-house and have some control over it and some efficiency standards. Right now, I'm starting to hear about some things that have occurred where we've spent money on a program and then found out just how disastrous it was a year later. And those things, you know, concern me greatly. And hopefully in the next year we'll make some progress in there. We have the money. It's not a money issue. It's how we're spending that money, and it's how these programs are being done. And with $300 million in Health and Human Services, a chunk of that should be going towards this problem in an effective, measurable ways, which I haven't seen it. And so it's been said that, you know, some of us conservatives want to gut the Health and Human Services department. Really not the truth at all. In fact, we just want it to be efficient. We want to spend taxpayers' money efficiently and wisely. We get a good return on our investment. Just because we can take money and throw it away is not appealing to me. And some of these programs, that's exactly what we've done. And it hasn't fixed the problem. You've kicked the can down the road. The money amounts continue to grow, and so does the problem. And so I say you've had your chance. Now give us some time to see what we can do.
That's part of a citizen sitting and watching and listening. And what I would like to see is more accountability. So even take that word away. Just reporting. Bring us back, whether it's 2-3 times a year, something on the success of these programs, because some we know of failure quickly.
Go.
It gets dropped away. Nobody talks about it anymore, and all these millions that have been thrown at it, or it's failing. They're not talking about it, and then they turn around and throw more money at it. So each of these programs, whether we get grants or not for them, they need to be looked at, evaluated, and say, yes, this one's working, let's institute more of this. This one's not, let's throw it away. You know, I don't care where the money comes from. Don't just use the money because they say we can have money if you do this particular program.
And I started thinking the other day, I think Red Bluff created a new policy where the homeless can stay at a certain park. And I thought, you know, if the city of Reading wanted to do something like that, that the McConnell Foundation and the Arboretum might be a good location for that.
Yeah, so so anyway, Lori, I think you hit the nail on the head. Honestly, I think you really did. The programs, I mean, Brenda's right about the programs. We have to have the programs, and it's good we have programs, but if you're throwing millions of dollars at it, what do they do? no one knows what they did or what they've done. And just, you know, maybe we should have the Board of Supervisors, as you said, get some kind of report on what these programs have done and how they've progressed. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That should be done like...
Well, and Patrick brought up about, you know, getting Health and Human Services involved right
yeah,
now
right
in
now.
The jail. So we're Brenda's point, and I've talked with her before, too, and it's like, I don't think we can wait for the center that they're talking about
right.
that's, you know, 10, 12 years out. We have the resources now to bring people in to help us now in the system we have. It just has to be organized and laid out, and somebody has to put their foot down and say, hey, we need some Health and Human Services, some help in the jail now, assessing the people that are there now, and if there's other programs or mental facilities. I agree about the outsourcing. I look at some of the consent items, it's like,